we've got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. May 27th, Memorial Day 2019. Thank you for joining me today. Now, this is going to be a quick show. I was going to just come on and really just share a message for today. But I had to include 2 stories that tie in directly with that message. Of course, many of you might have seen that Israel has, as I usually put it, under the cover of another holiday while people aren't paying attention, has attacked Syria again today. But there's more around the story. There's more, as always, there's 2 sides to it. But regardless, we know that they just bombed a sovereign nation, regardless of their claims, from location that is illegally occupied. So there's really it's really semantics at this point, as well as Lindsey Graham openly calling for a Venezuelan invasion on Memorial Day weekend. With no awareness of how absurd it is for him to say something like that on a time when we're supposed to be honoring the dead of exactly these kind of frivolous invasions that he's just so cavalier, in such cavalier fashion, just decided to call for an illegal invasion, you know, like we did with Grenada. Now, really, I'm going to go over those 2 stories, but today the real point on this Memorial Day is to remember what it is we're actually celebrating today, or whether or not we should be celebrating at all. So what I'm about to say, to begin, will no doubt be disliked by many, a lot likely, simply for my speaking the truth, and possibly censored by others for the very same reason. However, in my eyes, there is simply no better day than today to honor the sacrifice of so many by taking the quintessentially American action of speaking truth to power and exposing the lies that they were sold by the state. Now, far too many have been conditioned from birth to blindly serve and to see anything else as an affront to what this country represents. Yet this nation has not represented what it claims for quite some time, which is why I do what I do, to awaken those lost in the lies to the reality that their loyalties have been hijacked by those who care nothing for the love we have for this country's core values. Now, whether they were ever truly practiced by its founding fathers or not, they have become real for us, as I often say. This slowly materializing mountain of lies is also why there is such forceful efforts to make holidays like today about glorifying the state and its war efforts, as opposed to those they tricked into carrying them out, despite that being the claim, and to make those of us saying anything less out to be deceivers and manipulators, truly accusing us of that which they are guilty. This is classic propaganda, in the truest sense of the word. The saddest part is that so many have bought into this, and so many today that they do not even know their own history, and turn around and call those of us still embracing the true values of this country as the enemy, treasonous even. As a quote that I've used in the past, President Theodore Roosevelt summed it up best. For those that want to attack us, saying that you can't speak out against your president, you can't speak out against the government, that's just un-American. Well, this is what President Theodore Roosevelt had to say about that. To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we must stand by the president, and I would add, no criticism of the government, or stand by the government, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but it is morally treasonable to the American people. That's quite a contrast to what we hear today from a former founding father president. So today, all I ask of those of you out there currently recoiling in disgust for my willingness to speak ill of this country on such a day is first understand that I'm not speaking ill of this country. That is the deception. I love this country. I'm speaking ill of those who have deceived the masses and used their love of this nation to carry out wars of aggression in our name. Second, to take a step back and simply look at what such blind subservience to those in power who arrogantly lie to maintain it has truly done, both in this country and to those around the world who just dared to think for themselves. So I want you to consider this as we go into the stories we're going to talk about today. And especially on a day like today, we owe it to ourselves and to those who gave their lives for a cause that they likely realized in the process of pursuing was not what they were told it was, just like we recently talked about. To speak truth and not blindly acquiesce to the jingoistic pressure of the brainwashed masses. Now, it's not hard to do just a little research and see how many veterans tell quite a different story about what we should actually be proud of and what we are really doing overseas. Now, it's also not difficult to see just how hard the establishment works day in and day out to keep their message suppressed, the veterans, and keep them drugged up and in the shadows. As Ray McGovern said in a past article for Consortium News, Memorial Day should be a time of sober reflection on war's horrible costs, not a moment to glorify war. But many politicians and pundits can't resist the opportunity. Thank you for the super chat. And this is exactly what we see today. Not celebrating troops, but glorifying war under the guise of such a thing. And as James Madison, our fourth president and an author of our Constitution, wrote, quote, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the executive branch is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare." That's a direct quote from James Madison, our fourth president. And of course, continual warfare, perpetual unending war, is in fact exactly what the American people find themselves in today. Now, I want you to reflect on that, consider this as we go through today, as we talk about these next two stories, and think about what it is we're actually supposed to be celebrating today. Now, for the first article I want to touch on, there's only two really that I want to get into. This is, of course, you might have seen, as I said, Israel has indeed attacked Syria under the guise of what they always claim, is they're attacking Iran or defending themselves under the cover of what's going on today. As you know, this is from RT, but just for those out there that, you know, reflexively think that everything Russia is lying, it's also been covered by Haaretz, by Times of Israel, by the Washington Post. This indeed happened. Please feel free to do your due diligence before people reflexively call things fake news. Usually a good thing to think about. Israeli military says it attacked Syrian anti-aircraft position after its warplane came under fire. But we have to understand this story is very closely tied to where it's taking place, which is, in fact, the Golan Heights. And those that have watched this channel know exactly why that's so relevant, as they're maintaining that this is Israeli territory, and the only two people in the world that actually maintain that is the United States and Israel. Every other country has maintained the opposite for a very, very long time, through the United Nations, ongoing. Now, Syrian state media says that an Israeli rocket attack has struck the country south, right in the area along the coast of the border of the illegally occupied Golan Heights and the rest of Syrian's territory, killing one soldier and apparently injuring two others. Now, according to Syrian state media, Syrian air defenses attacked what they're claiming was an unmanned aerial vehicle that entered Syrian airspace near the southern suburb. Now, this is very interesting, of course, knowing that we've talked about these supposed mysterious drone, unmanned aerial vehicles, same basic thing, attacking Russian air bases and many other locations. You know, it's very interesting that they're disputing this fact, and maybe there's a reason for that. It's something to think about. It's also possible that the Syrian army is wrong or lying. Always need to consider all possibilities, like the other side refuses to do. But the reality is there's a lot of other information that makes this seem like maybe they're hiding the fact that it was, in fact, a drone. Or the reality that they're attacking Syria on Syrian territory and claiming they're in Israel, which is all the lie to begin with. Now, again, the unmanned vehicle is something to remember, and I think this is going to pop up again. But again, Israel's saying that this was just simply an attack on their jet in their own territory. Now, the report was carried on Syrian state TV and said that one military vehicle was also damaged. Now, it said the rocket landed in Tal al-Shar in the Kunitra territory on the edge of the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. So this is where it's very important to understand how this is playing out. Now, the Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson stated that it bombed a Syrian anti-aircraft battery on Monday night. So tonight, it's nighttime there for the people that are confused by that, that earlier in the day fired at one of its fighter jets during a routine mission within Israeli airspace. But of course, we know this is actually Syrian airspace because they're occupying illegally Syria's territory. But we have to understand that it happened earlier in the day. And they claim outright that the incident, the earlier incident, which they claim was Syria firing on, and this is, understand, I shouldn't even say that. Syria has as well said that we did fire on this, but it was an unmanned aerial vehicle in our airspace, which any other country would do the same. And as usual, the arguing back and forth. But there, or the earlier incident when Syria fired on their drone in allegedly in Syrian territory, they didn't immediately report it. Now ask yourself why that would be. Why would Israel not jump on the chance to report that they had been shot at, which they have done now? But I think there's a reason to that. We have to ask ourselves why they wouldn't have taken that advantage and done it, which they've already done now. So why the delay? There's something to think about there. Now, the statement called the incident abnormal, if you can believe that, as the attack took place in Israeli airspace. Quote, they said, quote, a violation of Israeli sovereignty in the Golan Heights, no less. I mean, this is just unbelievable, not only because Israel, on a near daily basis, it seems, is violating sovereignty of other countries, primarily Syria, and they're also illegally occupying Syrian territory at this moment in which they're claiming their sovereignty was violated. This is, again, this is the clown world, the fantasy world. This is them forcing their narrative, which is what I think this was largely about. Enforcing this narrative that this is our territory and we attack them from our territory and they attacked us while they were in theirs and we're in ours. Just that's the point. Golan Heights is Israeli territory. But understand that no one agrees with that. The United Nations has maintained since it was taken that it is still Syrian territory. And that has not changed. So I think that's what this is about. An abnormal violation of Israeli sovereignty. I just cannot, I laughed out loud when I saw that. Not because they don't also have sovereignty, but because they, of any people out there, have no right to claim to how, you know, somebody needs to do something that they're violating our sovereignty while they're occupying Palestine, whether illegally violating Syrian sovereignty and Iranian sovereignty on a near regular basis. It's comical. Now, according to the IDF, this is even more interesting, the shell from Syria that was fired from Syrian territory, which they claim was fired on Israeli territory, even though Golan Heights is Syrian territory, but they claim it was on their side of the occupied area. However, the shell from Syria landed inside Syrian territory and did not damage the Israeli plane. Does that add up to you? I mean, again, I understand that it's possible, certainly, but that means they must have been right along the line of the line between occupied Syrian territory and Syrian territory, which in and of itself suggests that there might have been some, you know, playing it fast and loose with the actual border, that they can fire on this plane that they claim was in Israeli territory and the shell apparently lands in Syrian territory. I mean, this is why you need to dig into these stories and get these things. And this is usually the kind of statement that gets kind of erased later down the line because they realize it was said, not realizing what they were saying. The point of that statement was to say, yes, because it didn't hit us because they're bad and we're more evasive and we, you know, the mission was accomplished, you know, patting themselves on the back. But inadvertently, I would say, makes it claim that the shell falling in their territory doesn't add up with what would make sense to their overall story. Now, Syrian media had reported earlier this month two incidents in which Israeli strikes hit inside southern Syria. Not with this other story, not with because they were fired on first, but because Israel just did it. And yet now we're supposed to assume that this is all because they were shot at, and it's not like, you know, and the violation of sovereign territory is the exact same thing these two other strikes were. I mean, it's ridiculous that we can see these two things happen with no justification, no mainstream coverage. And it's very interesting how the Washington Post was just right on this. The Washington Post was immediately covering the story when every other attack that Israel's carried out on Syria has barely been touched on way after the fact, once they've, you know, really sold the narrative that it was all because they were retaliating, even though it's later proven to be false. So I find it very suspect that all of a sudden the Washington Post was on it immediately. It was one of the first places that popped up. Because, of course, the point of their job as propagandists is to be there on call when they need to bolster the narrative, which is exactly what we're seeing now. That's my opinion. It says, quote, the IDF takes seriously any threat to its planes and will act to defend them, says the army in a statement. Again, reflect on how absurd this is when we've seen, you know, Israeli actions take down a Russian plane. We've seen Israeli actions take down Syrian planes. We've seen this all over the place. And by this logic, they could have immediately fired back and attacked Israel planes, which then would have kicked off war and would have been used to justify more aggressive action. But of course, when it's on the Israeli side, whatever they do afterward is okay because they're defending themselves. It's this preemptive claim of defending yourself that makes everything following it just okay. Of course, because they're not at fault. All the people they killed and things they destroyed when that person poked them in the back. Yeah, that's all okay because they were defending themselves. It was a dangerous poke. I mean, it's just, this is the ridiculous concept. Now, Netanyahu himself said, quote, the Syrian military tried to attack an Israeli aircraft and failed. He added that Israel has a zero tolerance policy when it comes to attacks against it. That's nice, Netanyahu. That must be nice that you can work like that when these other countries aren't allowed to even blink back at you once you bomb them first. Because then that would be an aggressive move that we have to enforce. It's just overt hypocrisy, overt contradiction within their own concepts. It's staggering, but it happens every single day. And we talk about it on the show every single day. Yet again, we have an illegal strike on Syria because they're currently illegally occupying Golan Heights. And then we understand that it's more than likely, based on the lies of the past, that what the Syrian government is saying is true. This was probably an unmanned vehicle, probably carrying out some nefarious action. This is my opinion. But it was on Syrian territory when it was shot down. This is what's important to understand. Now, Syria is actually claiming all the way that it wasn't even just on Golan Heights. They're saying that it was on Syrian territory. But this is where I think the dynamic of Golan Heights comes into both of their rhetoric. Now, the Israeli prime minister said in a statement that, quote, our policy is clear. We are not prepared to tolerate any aggression against us. We will retaliate against it forcefully and decisively. Again, just the absurdity of that not applying to anybody else but Israel is, you know, what we've come to expect today. But understand that Syria, as well as basically everyone but the U.S. and Israel, still consider Golan Heights Syrian territory, because it is, period. And the U.N. has never wavered on that fact, as I said. So this may be a case where Israel is flying well within Syrian territory, but claiming they're not because they are using the illegal occupied territory as an excuse or as a provocative move. And doing so in public fashion for a very specific reason. So Syria could say that they're in our servant territory because they're flying over the Golan Heights, which they would be correct in saying so. But you can see how Israel would see it a different way. And but the point always comes back to who is illegally the aggressor here? Who is illegally occupying? What does the UN have to say? Not that the UN should really be the deciding factor, but it plays a factor in all of this because we can see that basically the rest of the world continues to maintain that they're in the wrong. But that doesn't play a factor as they just continue to bomb whoever they seem to want, and the U.S. completely backs them. And this is the fraudulent system in which we're in today, that the rest of the world can acknowledge they're violating in the most gross fashion, violating every possible norm, and they simply just don't care. We need to reflect on that as Americans, as Israelis, as everybody else around the world that sees these governments as the problem. Now, Israel does not usually comment on reports concerning its strikes, as I've constantly pointed out. And in doing so today, to me, that kind of makes clear that they wanted this to be seen to make a very clear point. And I think that is, as we said, that this is, Golan Heights is Israeli territory. And you didn't know that's, you know, it is because U.S. said so. So it must be, right? Don't worry about the law. Don't worry about what's right or wrong. Don't worry about all the precedent before this or what the rest of the world has to say. The U.S. said it's ours, so it's ours. Period. Full stop, as Pompeo would say. So I think this is meant to enforce this into everybody's minds. And of course, then make it look like they were the victim, as Israel is so good at doing. Now, in recent years, Israel has acknowledged conducting hundreds of illegal, unprovoked airstrikes in Syria for a litany of reasons, many of which would never fly if used by any other nation. So consider that in all of this, that they just continue to carry out these aggressive acts with no justification, with impunity, because they're supported by pretty much the most warmongering oligarch country in the world today, which I have no doubt you know who I'm talking about. And speaking of that, let's go to the last story here, and this is Lindsey Graham, encapsulating exactly what I'm talking about perfectly. From Zero Hedge, Lindsey Graham asks Trump to invade Venezuela. Do exactly what Reagan did in Grenada. I mean, how offensive for someone to stand up and say to advocate more war, knowing that war will, without a doubt, take American lives on Memorial Day weekend. He said it yesterday. It's unbelievable. These people are the most aggressive war hawks I think I've ever seen. At least they're being open about it today. I think there was probably many more aggressive war hawks in the past that just didn't have to care about what the people thought of them because they didn't have the internet. Here's Lindsey Graham literally calling for war and then basing it on a previous illegal occupation that we had from before, which it's shocking. It truly is, but not surprising. Now, Senator Lindsey Graham went on, one of his characteristic jingoistic rants during a Fox News Sunday appearance, which the link is in this article in the show notes if you'd like to see it for yourself. I have the quotes for you. He directly appealed to Trump, calling on Donald Trump to initiate a U.S. invasion, as he said, akin to the one executed by Ronald Reagan in Grenada back in 1983. Says, quote, Trump said rightly, Maduro is not the legitimate leader of Venezuela. The entire region, he says, supports the Trump approach that Guaido is a legitimate leader, which is fundamentally false. I mean, that is demonstrably false. Very easy to show. The entire region? There's plenty of countries in South America that are aggressively against this, as well as the fact that the vast majority of the world continues to be against this. As much as they rant about 50 countries, which, by the way, when you actually try to dig into those, you can't find 50. I'll let you work that one out for yourself. They just keep saying 50, but I challenge anyone to make a list of those 50 countries and get back to me. You'll have a little bit of problem with that. Usually the way this goes with fake propaganda. But even if they had those 50 countries, we know that the other two-thirds of the world still maintain that Maduro is the president. They just don't tell you that. You see, they tell you the other side. They try to make that seem like that's powerful. But when you say the other way, it doesn't seem the same. The entire region supports him. Yeah, just lie, lie, lie. Repeat, repeat, repeat until people just take it as fact. He goes on to say, I would do exactly what Reagan did. I would give Cuba the ultimatum to get out of Venezuela. Again, reserting the as fact that Cuba's there with military occupation. That's possible and wouldn't even be a problem. Is that's an ally of Venezuela, except the fact that they're not. And multiple people have shown this from the ground, that they're sending doctors. And I mean, it's ridiculous. Again, though, I reiterate, even if they were sending military support, it's to an allied country. The U.S. encircling countries with their bases all around the world has no right to speak about what other countries can do militarily, especially when it's in response to aggressive U.S. actions. It goes on to say, if they don't get out of Venezuela, I would let the Venezuelan military know you've got to choose between democracy and Maduro. So basically what he's saying is democracy would be an aggressive U.S. invasion. I mean, do you get that? I mean, how ridiculous is this? He's literally saying that if Cuba didn't get out, that the U.S. would go in, because this is what he's calling for. And that would be between democracy being an illegal, aggressive U.S. invasion on a sovereign country, or Maduro. Because that's democracy, right? And hey, it doesn't surprise me. This is what the U.S. claims is democracy everywhere else. Democracy in action as we illegally overthrow another country. And it's here that Graham, of course, called for a direct invasion of Venezuela. On Memorial Day weekend, no less. I truly feel like that's just an insult to people that have given their lives in these fruitless wars of profit and control. Regime change wars that have nothing to do with American interests. And he's calling for another one while we're supposed to be mourning the loss of people who died in previous fruitless wars called for people like Graham. It's insulting. And he says, and if you choose Maduro, and Cuba, we're coming after you. This is our backyard, he said, of course, being condescending to the entirety of South America. Right? You're all just our backyard. We control you because this is our area. We lay claim to this with the archaic Monroe Doctrine. This is shocking stuff to understand that this is how they see it. They think they control this because it's what, near them? That is some hubris if I've ever seen it. And really, it has nothing to do with that. It's just simply about laying claim to it, as they've done in so many other places, for control and really profit at the end of the day, for as it boils down to the individual person. But as many of us know, at the top of the chain, it's a little more nefarious than that. Now, during the interview, Graham had repeated the unproven claim that Maduro, quote, wouldn't be in power without 6,000 or 7,000 security forces in Venezuela. Implying we're talking about Cuba and Russia and all these, oh my God, all these places. No evidence, nothing. Not a single speck of evidence to suggest anything they're claiming, which exactly like everything else we talk about. But you know what? Let's just trust them, because that's worked so well for Americans in the past. Now, leading up to the 1983 U.S. Marine invasion of Grenada, an action which defense planners saw as a crucial check on communist influence, Reagan told the American people, quote, when the thugs tried to wrest control of Grenada, there were 30 Soviet advisors and hundreds of Cuban military and paramilitary forces on the island. Anybody seen the parallel here? Tired old things they use over and over and over. They just play on the Americans' ignorance to their own history. That they say the same things, they use the same ploys and the same tired things over and over to invade other illegal countries. Now, however, unlike the tiny island of Grenada, which had a population of less than 100,000, Venezuela has a population size approaching 30 million, with about 160,000 active military troops, plus many hundreds of thousands more in National Guard and Reserve forces. So it doesn't really add up there for you, Lindsey Graham, but the reality is it's not about that. Knowing that that kind of an invasion of a 30 million plus country would take massive tolls on both populations. But on this Memorial Day weekend, Graham doesn't care about that, because all he wants is war and profit and control. Let's send our people out to be killed again for our profit. Now, what's important to end the show today is understanding what Grenada was really about. And I'm not going to dive into the whole thing. As I said, I'm trying to make this short show. I guess I'm never good at that. But I left the article for you. I'll read you a couple parts of this. But read this article in its entirety in the show notes from Global Research. And this it talks about what Grenada was really about. And you'll understand the parallel once you get into it, entitled Remember the Grenada Invasion. Grenada's real threat was ideological. Exactly like everything else we're getting into. It has nothing to do with the lies they sold to America. Now, it says the U.S. pounced on the island nation of Grenada like an elephant on a flea 30 years ago to wipe out the remnants of a revolution. This is what it always comes down to. A revolution of people trying to strike their own path. Get away from the boot of U.S. imperialism, or even just control of their own direction. And of course, they got to shut it down. Adding insult to injury and violation of international law, as usual, the U.S. pretended that Grenadians, I believe is how you say that properly, didn't fight back. They're pretending that there weren't actual civilians and people on the ground that fought back to defend against the illegal U.S. invasion of their country. Not Cubans, not Russians, but people from Grenada. And instead, as it says, quote, for weeks, the Americans claimed to be chasing an elusive force of Cuban super soldiers around the island. Except we now know that they were actual people from Grenada just trying to defend their country. And they were sold to us as Cuban super soldiers. Again, please don't miss the connection here. Now, Washington's larger strategic rationale for marshaling overwhelming force against the unoffending 133 square mile pinpoint of a country off the coast of Venezuela, interestingly enough, whose biggest export was nutmeg and whose security forces probably numbered no more than 1,200, was that Cuba and or Soviets were poised to turn Grenada into a military and or terrorist base. Again, do you see the tie? Now, the Grenada invasion was, in a sense, simply a continuation of U.S. gunboat diplomacy, as the article puts it, in the Western Hemisphere, as was practiced as late as 1965 in the invasion intervention of the Dominican Republic, which was yet another illegal U.S. regime change in its history, which was also undertaken under the hybrid rationales of not another Cuba and rescue of American nationals. However, Grenada may have been the first U.S. occupation in which members of the native government and armed forces that had evaded death or capture were immediately dubbed fugitives, outlaws in their own land where they had been the lawful and recognized authority only days before. Now, please dive into this article and read through it and understand that in every possible case, which I've really struggled to come to grips with over my years in doing this, every time I dive into a historical event such as this that was framed as some kind of a greater good or national security interest, I'm always sad and unsurprised to find out that it was lies, that it was much more about control, building the empire, authoritarian rolling on of the U.S. war machine. That is what it was always about, and that's what Grenada was about. And the history's there for us to see, and yet we're just supposed to pretend that today's different, that Venezuela's different, that Syria's different, that Yemen's different, it's all different, Iran's different, it's all different. Has nothing to do with their long-sought agenda of all of these countries. Yeah, nothing to do with that. It's different today. Trump's here, it's all different. This is what they want you to think. And the sad reality on this day of all days, that they're pushing for more war, should show you all you need to know. So, as we are forcibly told today to embrace an idea of blind patriotism and subservience to the empire, lest we be seen as un-American, we should absolutely remember those who gave their lives for it, regardless of how manipulated and misled they might have been, as their actions were incredibly brave nonetheless, as they believed the mirage that they were sold like so many others. Yet we owe it to them and everyone else to be honest about what it all represents and what it is all truly for. As to mindlessly say it's for freedom or spreading democracy is to simply ignore not only what those obvious lies have produced around the world, but also to allow it to carry on in our name, which to some degree makes those willing to ignore it for their daily comforts complicit, culpable even. So honor your loved ones today. Honor their courage and their beliefs. But do not blind yourself to how the faceless oligarchy uses their courage to do anything but fight for freedom and liberty. To call this atrocity out for what it is truly American. It is what this country was founded upon. And I can think of no better way to honor those lost to such fruitless wars of aggression than to stand, or sit, in defiance of tyranny. And I hope today, on this day, we're supposed to be celebrating all the things that we're talking about, I hope you will recognize and reflect on everything we talked about. And again, remember what it is that they want you to be celebrating and what it is that you're actually celebrating. So thank you for tuning in today. Maybe a little longer than I expected. I'm going to leave you with a clip that I, from yesterday's show, actually, a clip that I put up today that I just felt was just too perfect for this topic to not include. And of course, it's about the bad side effects of war and what it is actually doing to people. So go out there, celebrate those that you have lost, the people that you loved, but make sure to remember what this is all about. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant. And after seeing such horrors, which again, that's horrible, absolutely horrific. After seeing these horrific things in all the U.S.-backed and U.S.-led fields of war all around the world, funny how all these same things happen right where these places where the U.S. is leading their liberations, and then it leaves them worse when they leave, but, you know, that's for another time. Now that we're seeing these things in all of these U.S.-backed areas, this last story should really put this into perspective for you and why Americans do not want war. But they force and manipulate every American into it anyway. This last one coming from Caitlin Johnstone, always doing a great job. This article entitled, "The U.S. Army Asked Twitter How Service Has Impacted People." The answers were gut-wrenching. Now, this was almost hard to read because it shows you what they don't want you to see. It shows you what the real consequences of war that they try to hide by these jingoistic halftime shows and marches and, oh my God, everybody celebrate the military, everything's great, we love, you know, it's ridiculous. Not that we shouldn't support each other and support the people that think they're doing the right thing, even though they're not overseas. What we have to recognize is that the people behind them that are manipulating them to going are lying to us about what's really happening. Excuse me. Now, after posting a video of a young recruit talking to the camera about how service allows him to better himself as a man and a warrior, the U.S. Army tweeted, "How has serving impacted you?" Which is just a very stupid thing to do, I think. Here's, you know, and this is the link center. You can watch the video for yourself. It's just what it sounds like. He's basically standing there saying how great everything is and that he is a warrior and a man. And we're, you know, kind of the same thing you would think that they're trying to cultivate, the kind of person that they would draw into this. And it says, how has serving impacted you? Now, after as of her article being posted, the post has over 5,300 responses. Most of them are heartbreaking. Tweet after tweet after tweet, people use the opportunity that the Army has inadvertently given them to describe how they or their loved ones had been chewed up and spit out by the war machine that never cared about them. This article exists, her article, as she says, solely to document a few of the things that have been posted in that space, partly to help spread public awareness and partly in case the thread gets deleted in the interest of national security. Now, she lists a lot of them. All very sad. I'll just read a few of them to give you a picture of what the U.S. government would never want you to see. And the first one says, my daughter was raped while in the Army. They took her to the hospital where all male staff tried to convince her to give the guy a break because it would ruin his career, his life. She persisted, wouldn't back down, did a tour in Iraq, now suffers from PTSD. Says, I've had the same nightmare almost every night for the past 15 years, another person said. Another one said, someone I loved joined right out of high school, even though I begged him not to. A few months after his deployment ended, we reconnected. One night, he told me he loved me and then shot himself in the head. If you're going to prey on kids for imperialism, at least treat their PTSD. I mean, just think about this. This is direct. The U.S. Army said, how has this in serving impacted you? And this is what they're saying. And this is, by and large, almost all of the responses. Next one says, my cousin went to war twice and came back with a drug addiction that killed him. My other cousin could never get paid on time, and when he left, they tried to withhold his pay. Another person says, it's given me a fractured spine, a TBI, which is a brain injury, combat PTSD, burn pit exposure, and a broken body with no hope of getting better. Not even medically retired for a fractured spine. WTF. Always nickel and diming these heroes, aren't you, U.S. government? It says, the next one says, y'all killed my father by failing to provide proper treatments after multiple tours. Next one says, I have PTSD and still wake up crying at night. Also have a messed up leg that I probably will have to deal with the rest of my life. Depression, anger issues. Next one says, I'm permanently disabled because I trained through severe pain after being rejected from the clinic for malingering. Can you think about that? And he says, turns out my pelvis was cracked and I ended up having to have hip surgery when I was 20 years old. Malingering, they said. Get out of here, you. It upsets me that they, you know, they chase him off for not being tough enough when he had a cracked pelvis. I wonder if that had anything to do with, you know, actually not wanting to foot the bill. Next one says, my son died 10 months ago. He did 3 overseas tours. He came back with severe mental illness. The last one I'll read says, I was thinking about enlisting until I saw this thread. Hard pass. I mean, I really recommend that you go through and read this whole thing for yourself and recognize what this is really showing you and how shocking this is. It really needs to wake people up to what the real side effects are and what this is doing. Think about what this does to generations moving forward. Think about the shootings and all the things that have been happening that are perfectly corresponding with our wild increase in military action, our wild increase in pharmaceutical drugs. Perfectly aligns with that. Correlates perfectly with the rise. And recognize that they don't want us to see what the real effects are. because they need us to maintain their war machine.